go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and we begin another broadcast here from Capitol Hill from the headquarters of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign, the AIC campaign, working on trying to end the disease-ridden nightmare that is stalking Appalachia, brought on by mountaintop removal coal extraction. Yeah. Little story about that this evening. It would appear, and I'll leave this for the economic geniuses to sort out. But it's quite fascinating, really. I'd love to know just exactly how it is that this works out. It appears that the coal industry is going to hell in a handbasket, and yet people are still silly enough to invest in it. Beats the dickens out of me. Here's the original story. Well, we'll get to it. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This little effort that's been ongoing for many, many, many years now happens exactly and exclusively because of you. We find ourselves this evening actually close to being even with our fundraising efforts. Thanks to input from Texas Betsy and from our buddy Scott in Sweden and from Brian, we find ourselves needing only $100 this evening. We caught up with the shortfall from last night and took a big bite out of tonight. So there you go. 10 folks at $10, 5 at 20. Well, you get the idea. We need to raise $100 this evening. The PayPal button's at headonradionetwork.com, as is the traditional overland mail address. And either way is fine. If you do decide to send it in via the mail, it'll tickle Boss Man Wayne pink. He hates opening the mailbox and being greeted by an echo. That address, of course, is available at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. I'll go ahead and give it out right now, though, because I have it conveniently memorized. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Remember, checks, money, orders, and the like should be made payable not to Bob Kincaid, because Bob Kincaid doesn't get the money, and should be made payable to the Horn or Head On Communications, something like that, to make bank deposits credit union deposits considerably easier. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, the 16th day of July, 2013. The program is, yes, indeed, live. And we've got some pretty Titanic stuff to deal with out there. Reading from this one particular article I saw earlier today. Publicly traded U.S. coal companies have lost nearly $46.9 billion in market value since the most recent market peak in the spring of 2011, more than the gross domestic product of many nations, including Costa Rica and Tunisia. This a story by Dan Lowry. But some companies have weathered the protracted market downturn better than others and salvaged shareholder value thanks to their more diversified asset bases. CONSOL Energy, Inc., overtook Peabody Energy as the largest domestic coal producer, yada, 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 yada. They're hemorrhaging money. They're saying console is surviving a little better because they began to diversify into natural gas in the early 2000s. Interesting. None of these dumb bastards want to diversify into wind or solar or geothermal, for which there is an almost unlimited supply. Oopsie. But, yeah. Let's see. Jefferies LLC analyst Peter Ward says, in our opinion, the quality of Consol's geology in northern Appalachia and the potential benefits of high fixed cost leverage remain underappreciated by the market. Underappreciated. Don't you love the weasel speak of the economic sector? That means, it was a subsidiary of Consol that blew up the mountain that's on the back of the state quarter for the state of West Virginia. Charming, isn't it? Yeah, that means that, it's underappreciated. Us ingrate hillbillies don't fully appreciate being poisoned. Sorry, Marty, you lose. That clip's going to get out there. Sorry, just sorry. It kind of has to. What? Marty was saying, please, no Limbaugh clip today. Well, if I can play a clip, and let's do remember that that's always, when I'm working with this rig here, that's always an open question. I might be able to play one, but not two. Mm-hmm. Might be able to play two, but not three. Right. What's this? All right, that's taken care of. Now, I don't know, does it take? And I guess this is it's not really a rhetorical question because, oh, by the way, we can take calls this evening. We can take calls either directly via Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is that address, BobKincaidHorn, if you want to reach the program via Skype. But you can also reach the program via the traditional telephone lines, 304-658-3333. So that opens up the conversational possibilities a little bit more. We'll open the phone lines in a little bit. But no, the question I'm asking, does it take a while for the stupid to catch up with the news cycle? Because, you know, the Zimmerman verdict came out, and then a little bit of time passed, and it seems like I get up this morning And there's just stupid, there's just a sea of stupid boiling, like meat in the landscape or the whatever is boiling, is just bubbling and frothing like somebody's thrown hamburger into a piranha-laden river. Yeah, really, really stupid. Here's a story for the Snowden fans. This is just precious. George Zimmerman's brother, Robert, he says his family hasn't talked to Trigger Man George since the verdict. But why not? Why not?
George Zimmerman's brother, Robert Zimmerman, is with me now in studio, and good morning to you.
Good morning, Bill.
I think we first met 3 months ago, I believe, right here in the studio here in New York. And your parents told Barbara Walters last night that they haven't talked to their son, they haven't seen their son since the verdict late on Saturday night.
Right. They saw him in the courtroom, and he wanted to go home. He was getting very emotional there at the end, not what we saw on camera, but later. But we do have concerns.
You know, like Dorothy.
I want to go home. I just want to go home, Auntie M. I want to go home.
Of course, Trayvon Martin can't go home. But why haven't they spoken to him?
and always have of having our phones tapped, having our
whoa, stop, huh?
And he wanted to go home. He was getting very emotional there at the end, not what we saw on camera, but later. But we do have concerns and always have of having our phones tapped, having our phones, you know, listened to by the administration or whomever, because George is now, as we know, continually the subject of ongoing investigation.
You see where people like Greenwald get us now? Now, you've got this, by the way, I don't know if you saw this or not. A couple of different outlets have dug up George Zimmerman's old, I know, that nobody even remembers what it was anymore, but they've dug up his old MySpace page back from when he lived in, oh dear, gives me the creepies, Manassas, Virginia, when he got a couple or three felonies pled down to a misdemeanor for acts of violence. Mm-hmm. And they're laden with, the MySpace page is just laden with nasty business about these damn Mexicans. Well, there goes that little right-wing argument that George Zimmerman, oh, he's not a white guy, he's Hispanic. These damn Mexicans. Man works all day, works 96 hours a week, and he's got some Mexican out there trying to take it away from him. Whoopsie. But did we hear that right? Did we hear Robert Zimmerman right? We got to go back.
And he wanted to go home. He was getting very emotional there at the end, not what we saw on camera, but later. But we do have concerns and always have of having our phones tapped, having our phones, you know, listened to by the administration or whoever.
We'll see that this is becoming a running theme now, because Barack Obama just does that. You know, he's just like Richard Nixon. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just like him. But there is one issue. All we had in the Zimmerman trial was testimony about what people heard. If the PRISM program is out there sweeping up every call, you know, every time you call home to grandma and say, "Grandma, I remember the brownies you used to make me when I remember the oatmeal raisin cookies you used to make me when I was little, and I was wondering if you could give me the rest," and the government's got all of that. Now, they've apparently got everything except, mind you, the phone call that Trayvon Martin made, in which he described being followed by the creepy cracker. Yeah. Oh, dear. Speaking of creepy, got a little insect here on the wall that isn't that. I hate to just gratuitously kill things, but stand by. This guy's got to die. Well, hopefully that wasn't the deadly DC jumping spider. And we will reach some sort of mutually beneficial non-aggression understanding. I'm a little worried about the spider now. But, you know, I know there's actually a spider. Therefore, my worries aren't completely paranoid, as opposed to Robert Zimmerman, who is convinced that, well, the administration or whoever is out there listening to, yeah, Mom, Dad, they can't call poor Georgie because they don't want... They don't want Barack Obama listening or whoever on our conversations. Well, why not? I mean, what's the nature of that conversation? By God, we got away with that one, didn't we, Pa? Yeah, son, we sure did. Because why?
Ever, because George is now, as we know, continually the subject of ongoing investigation. So a lot of the things that we do are connecting in person. That's how we've managed to stay hidden for so long. It's kind of old school, but it works.
Have you seen him?
No, I've been in New York. I have not.
Have you spoken to him?
I was on the phone with my sister when he called my sister and communicated that way, you know, back and forth, clicking back and forth on the other line, but I have not spoken to him directly for the same reason.
Would you describe your brother as in hiding?
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, I texted him, but not to actually make phone calls like that. We're back to what we were doing in March of 2012, mm-hmm. because it's right in everybody's mind right now.
What did he tell you after the verdict came down Saturday night? What was his feeling? What was his state of mind?
Again, he was on the phone with Gracie, our little sister, and he was not really yet, it appeared, able to process everything that had happened. Freedom is a very new...
He hadn't come up with the story yet, in other words. Oh, my God.
Notion to him. He's been confined not just by an ankle bracelet, but, you know, psychologically and emotionally confined.
Oh, my God, he's been confined not just by an ankle bracelet, but emotionally and psychologically confined. I gotta think a coffin is pretty confining. Trayvon's pretty well confined. Been since February 2012. Yeah, confined. Jesus Christ. Okay, just checking for spiders. Doesn't your heart just bleed for the Zimmerman family? No, it doesn't. And now, of course, there's beyond the paranoia. There's also a report that that Zim, remember the internet posting, "Nice shooting, Zim." That Zim plans to go to law school. Oy. I wonder who he can stand his ground against if he doesn't get into his first choice. Cassie, dear, just talking to our Cassie up there, working toward graduation with some sort of honors at Princeton. Cassie, if you go to a law school and you find that there's this creepy dude in your class that might be George Zimmerman, transfer. Real quick. Of course, Zim's been pretty much a failure at everything he's touched in his life, so I don't know. He might not make it through his first semester of 1L. Yeah, Barack Obama sitting around listening to the Zimmerman family phone call. Self-important much? You know, that Obama. But like I said, it's taken a while for the crazy to catch up. And when you really want to talk about the crazy, you know, nothing will really do the way, and Isaac sent this along. He keeps, I don't know, he just keeps an eye out for this sort of thing. When you want crazy, you really go, you really want to go to, well, dear old Francis Pat Robertson. On my Twitter feed earlier today, Sandra noted that it really is time for old Pat to go to glory. And I'd say it's past time. And I'm pretty certain at this point that the Aricept is not working. Right?
You know, they showed that young man. He was 17, he was a, you know, fully formed young African-American male.
Anybody want to take that one on? Because I'm incapable. He was a fully formed African-American male. What does that mean, fully formed? Is Pat under the impression that African-American people sort of metamorphose like something in a chrysalis as opposed to good upstanding Christian white people who are born, you know, with arms and legs and 10 fingers and 10 toes and everything, but that the scary African-American young males, they don't get fully formed until they're about 16. They start out with little bumps on their sides and it extends into fingers and hands and then the forearms and then up to the shoulders and or is there a sexual component here that, because, well, Pat can't help it. Pat keeps Dr. Freud awfully busy. He, a fully formed African American young man, fully formed.
You know, they showed that young man. He was 17, he was a, you know, fully formed young African American male. They've showed him as a little boy, like 12-year-old mm-hmm. pictures,
before his arms formed, or maybe before his head was fully developed, or right.
DC thing. On the 9/11 call, Zimmerman's calling and say, "Look, this is a suspicious person. He's wearing a hood. He's out here. I think he may be a particularly criminal."
Well, no. Why don't you actually use the quote, Pat? "These effing assholes always get away." Say it, Pat. Jesus won't be mad at you. Remember, you're a journalist, right? You're just out there bringing Jesus' truth. Yeah. That's probably too delicate for the nonagenarians who spend their time writing checks to Pat and, well, watching Pat and gumming their oatmeal and, you know, right, the CBN audience.
And the 911 operator said, "Well, is he Asian? Is he African-American?" You know, so forth. And Zimmerman answered, he said, "Is he a black male?" He said, "I think he's a black male." NBC...
Okay, and?
News edited all of that out and then put Zimmerman calls him, "I'm following somebody, he's a black male."
I think one of the things you...
Really? NBC did that? Or did NBC do that inside Pat Robertson's head? Now, remember, I know if you aren't really... immersed in the history of the Old South, that it's easy to think that maybe Georgia or Alabama or Mississippi was somehow more racist than Virginia. Virginia, the Old Dominion, the Commonwealth, is, of course, Pat Robertson's home, but no, Virginia worked harder to maintain the old institutions of racism than any other southern state. And that's worth remembering when considering the words of a Pat Robertson all about how, you know, well, about fully formed black males. Jesus, what is this, Mandingo? Fully formed.
You said, though, that so to me, makes the whole thing difficult is I'm following. I mean, that operator kept saying to him, don't go, don't go, yeah. Someone's coming. I mean, you can't, you just can't have people doing that.
Well, you can't.
What, Cruella? Why not? I mean, sure, that's the job of upstanding Christian white folks is to make sure that the young bucks out there ain't running around and, well, you know, miscegenating, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you can, but I mean, there's been some crime in this area, and the criminals were wearing these hoods, and so it's one of those things.
Wait, stop. The criminals were wearing these hoods. You're about 120 years too late, Pat, to be talking about criminals who were wearing these hoods. Because, well, your neck of the woods has had a problem with criminals wearing hoods. Hint, it ain't Trayvon Martin, nor any other fully formed black male. Jesus, fully formed. Yeah, Agnes, I think you're right. Agnes says, sounds like old Pat got a little tingly in his lady place.
We have a criminal justice system. People are considered innocent until proved guilty. The jury listened very carefully and intently. It was a very fair trial.
Who's to say how carefully or uncarefully the jury listened? I mean, if you went and you had the stomach for it and you watched that interview with juror B-37, G-19, I-12, bingo, you know she wasn't listening very or doing anything very carefully insofar as she says that she was pretty sure. She knew that there had been riots in Sanford, Florida after the killing of Trayvon Martin when no such things happened. Oops. Yeah, thank you, Agnes. How carefully did the jurors listen? Carefully enough to start hustling a book. That's how carefully. The stupid is strong with this one.
The prosecution threw the book at him, everything they had possibly.
No, they did not. Hell's bells, they could have charged him with murder one. Book 'em, Dano. Murder one. They didn't. They did not charge him with murder three based upon the abuse of a child, i.e. shooting them to death. Because, yeah, that really is child abuse. You know, felony murder. That would have sent him right up to old Sparky. But Judge Whitelady didn't want Zim facing the death penalty now, did she? No. Because we don't do that to white boys, if we can help it. And we've already established that, yeah, Zim's a white boy because he identifies as white, because, well, you don't sit there bitching about, you know, damn Mexicans, if you self-identify as Hispanic. No, you don't.
And they couldn't make a case, and so the jury said not guilty. So that should end it. So let's ask our friend Al Sharpton and others to cool it and stop grandstanding and trying to get political points.
Who's grandstanding? Our friend Al Sharpton. What does he think this is, the freaking Senate? Our friend Al Sharpton. You know, the funny thing is, he's a reverend, and you're a reverend, Pat, and somehow I just can't imagine you both out there are worshiping the same Jesus. I just can't. Cool it? What's hot? These right-wing freaks are imagining racial tensions where they simply don't exist. It's not there. At all.
The deal is over, and the Justice Department should not even consider bringing some kind of a case. It would be an outrage.
It would be an outrage if the Justice Department brought a civil rights complaint. I don't expect the Justice Department Civil Rights Division to bring any sort of a civil rights action. any more than I think that Barack Obama is sitting there twisting the dials with the headphones on. I can't quite hear them. I'd like to hear George Zimmerman speaking to his father, admitting guilt, but I can't hear him. Damn it, Edward Snowden. Why did you have to ruin our diabolical plans?
You know, folks, there was a tragedy in Mississippi. A man named Emmett Till was taken.
Oh, this is going to be interesting. This is going to be Pat Robertson's version of Black Like Me. It was a tragedy in Mississippi, a young man named Emmett Till. No, it wasn't a tragedy, Pat. Francis. It was not... No, Marion. Marion, not Francis. Marion! Marion, it was not a tragedy. It was a goddamn murder. Brutal, bloody murder. Note from Marty. Now, they're not seeing racial tension where it might not be. They're fanning racial tension and pretending they're not doing it. Well, yes, that's true, Marty. There is a difference. But do let's continue. I think we can all use a lesson in the history of... lesson in the history of racial violence in this country. Go ahead, Marion. You're glowing in the dark with your white male privilege, but do please, go ahead.
And lynched and brutally murdered, and it was apparently...
Because, you know, some people are gently murdered. Just saying.
Supported by the state, people involved in the government, at least the local government, and there was no question of what that was.
Oh, you mean supported by the state? You mean the state law enforcement didn't want to go forward with the criminal prosecution of the people who murdered Emmett Till? Kind of like the way the Sanford, Florida Police Department said, no, Zim, go and sin no more. No crime here. Oh, you are obviously standing your ground. Yeah, sure, this is a clear-cut case of self-defense. We told you not to stalk the kid, but you did anyway, and then you attacked him. Nothing to prosecute here.
This thing was not Emmett Till.
This thing was not Emmett Till. Just let that roll around for a minute inside, in between your ears. This thing, Trayvon Martin. This thing was not Emmett Till. You heard him right. I haven't manipulated the audio in any way. You heard it right. He just called Trayvon Martin this thing. Emmett Till was, what, 15? Trayvon was 17? This thing. This thing. Wouldn't you love to... I mean, no, not for an instant would I have Trayvon's mama or daddy be subjected to something like this. But you wonder if in all of his magisterial privilege, you wonder if Pat Robertson would have the... Marion would have the courage, the guts, the gumption, the nerve to look at either or both of those individuals in the eye, face to face, and still call Trayvon Martin this thing. This thing.
A young man, who apparently jumped on a man who thought he was a quasi-policeman. And the two had a scuffle, and one of them shot the other one.
And that's just how it works in America, because that's okay. Of course, that's not what happened. Remember, just to reiterate, the defense team brought in a piece of concrete and talked about weaponized concrete. And talked about his head being, Zim's head being bashed into the concrete. It was bashed so hard, it required two, count 'em, two Band-Aids. That sounds more like a boo-boo, not a bashing. They didn't get into an altercation. At most, I can envision a situation in which George Zimmerman, neighborhood hero, draws down on Trayvon Martin, and Trayvon tries to get... No. Oh, and by the way, one of the defense counsel's kids, I forget which one it was. Well, after the verdict, he took his girls out for ice cream. And one of the girls was bragging on Twitter about it, and she said of her father's performance at trial, "Dad killed it." Yeah. Dad killed it. Oh, wrap it up, Marion.
Well, that's the way it was. So why do we make such a big thing of it? I mean, the facts went to the jury. The jury deliberated and had all the evidence. And they said, we cannot find intentional murder. We can't find second-degree murder. How can we find manslaughter? That's it. This wasn't a state action. The state wasn't involved. It wasn't a civil rights matter. It was a matter between two guys. They had a fight. So why don't we just chill out and say justice has been served, justice has been done, and let's not try to take vengeance. In one case, a Hispanic was jumped upon by a gang of black young people saying, we're going to pay you back for Trayvon. Well, he didn't have anything to do with Trayvon. He was in New York. But nevertheless, that kind of thing, we don't need to exacerbate the racial tension. What we need to do is to love each other and live in harmony.
Oh, yeah. Calm everybody down, Mahatma Robertson. Justice has been served? No. See, that's the thing. There's a lot of people who are pretty much convinced that justice has not been served. It's not justice when the guy who blows away your unarmed teenage son gets to walk at liberty in the streets. That's not justice. Not even a little bit. And then the thing that Marty Marty with a comment, he says, hopefully Tim Lincecum never walks through that neighborhood in Florida or near Evil Uncle Chuckles area, because Tim likes to wear hoodies. Lots of people do. I have one. I do. I actually do. Ferg has one. I think every member of my family has a hoodie. Because, see, way, way back in the day, we didn't call them hoodies. We called them hooded sweatshirts. Because they were. They were sweatshirts that had hoods attached. And they met a certain need. When it's not cold enough for a heavy coat, but it's too cool for nothing at all, That's a great piece of outerwear. But apparently, in at least Sanford, Florida, it's enough to get you killed. Yeah, what did one horse's rear end say? Zimmerman didn't racially profile Trayvon Martin, but he fashion profiled him. Like I said, there's this backlog of stupid that's just rolling, and mean and hateful and ugly, that's just rolling out of this country right now. And it's all over the place. Naturally, there's a whole lot of it to be had on right-wing radio, but some of it is coming out in the mainstream. And then, well, oh dear, then there's this. Then there's this. If you, and this is, I warn you, this is pretty much going to be vomit-inducing. So, if you're in the middle of dinner, think twice. Or maybe you need to just walk away from the program for a minute. Oh, dear. Well, let's just get this over with.
Stick with me. Keep your eyes on the radio. CNN informs us via Rachel Gentile that Trayvon called Rachel and said that he was being followed by a creepy-ass cracker. Which we have now learned that is a person acting like they are a police, who like a security guard. So then, Piers Morgan, the ever-penetrating inquisitor, said, so was there anything you wished you'd said when you were in there, meaning as a witness on the stand?
Nigga.
You know, I've been saying ever since the election of Barack Obama that the right wing is looking for an excuse to just give this word a workout. They have finally found it. If this word is a trigger for you, step away, turn down the speakers, whatever you need to do. This is not pleasant.
Why?
People, the whole world say it's a racist word. Mind you, around 2000s, that was not, they changed it around, I think. It starts spelling N-I-G-G-A. Nigga.
What does that mean to you, that way of spelling it? What does that word mean to you?
That means a male.
A black male?
No, any kind of male.
Black or white?
Black, any kind. Chinese could say nigga. That's my Chino nigga. They could say that.
This was...
And now the wisdom is to be imparted by America's truth detector, America's oxymoron, America's junkie in charge. Now, you've got the gist of what she was saying there. And there are references to that word. In fact, there are references to what is it? There's a sort of martial arts kind of movie out there where that's in play. And but for a self-aggrandizing, self-important bag of pus like Flush Flimball, this doesn't have cultural overtones. This is, of course, because he is the ultimate, I don't know, the ultimate rabid llama. This is all about Rush. To wit.
Between 9 and 10 p.m. last night on CNN, who is in a quest to become the, again, most respected news organization in the country, perhaps even the world. So, nigga, with an A on the end. Well, I think I can now. Isn't that the point? Because it's not racist. That's the point. I could be talking about a male. I could be a Chinese male. A guy at the laundromat. I could be talking
a guy at the... No, really. Stop. He went there. A Chinese male. A guy at the laundromat. Because, you know, that's where the Chinese males are. My husband, some hotshot, here's his ancient Chinese secret, Calgon. Stop me if you've heard this one. I grieve for my country. I weep for what passes for my culture. No, I mean, there is that moment. There's that moment early on in Idiocracy where the Army Major has gone underground to find a subject for the hibernation experiment. And you know, it's the one that involves the, well, you know, it is a fascinating lifestyle. You see, the love of a pimp is different from the love of a square. And Rush Limbaugh, in discussing this, and there's video, of course, is smirking like a fox gnawing shit out of a wire brush. I can, well.
That's the point. I could be talking about a male. I could be a Chinese male. A guy at the laundromat. I could be talking about a man. That's what she said it means.
And because everything is about Rush, that's what that means. It means that now Rush can take phone calls by saying, talk to me, my... And see, I won't use the word. And I could probably use it a little more convincingly, even with my shiny white privilege, than Rush can. But I won't. I just won't. Ron and Raleigh writing in. Subject line, justice in post-racial America. That's America with three Ks. Well, Ron's only got one. I'll add the extra two for you, Ron. Bob, I'm firmly convinced that in post-racial America, unless you're an avowed white supremacist, white people are incapable of recognizing racism in themselves or other white people. From the onset of the Trayvon Martin killing, there was every intention not to prosecute George Zimmerman. That's true. The Sanford Police Department had to be driven to it. Every instruction, every direction given to the jury favored old Zim. Every white person I've heard comment on this case has brought up Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, or Ben Jealous. Oh, I haven't. Claiming they haven't done anything to address black-on-black crime as if they give a damn about black-on-black crime or anything else about black people for that matter. Speaking of Emmett Till and jury verdicts, the jury in that case found the murderers not guilty after 20 minutes of deliberation. When asked why it took so long, the jury foreman said they'd have been back sooner, but they had to finish their Coca-Colas. And that's the truth. Absolutely the truth. This from Michael. Bob, you mentioned Zimmerman only needed two Band-Aids. I didn't watch the trial intensely. Couldn't stand it. But do you know offhand where the broken nose meme comes from? I keep seeing trolls throw that back at normal people, that Trayvon assaulted Zimmy and broke his nose. Just wondering, where's that from? Did a defense witness make that claim? I thought the medical examiner said his injuries were negligible. I know, not trying to get into the weeds like some kind of OJ thing, but I keep seeing this as the one-line retort, and I hate to leave things unchallenged, especially when the trolls are people I know personally. Sigh. It comes out of one of the statements that old Zim made, that he whacked him in the nose. There's only one problem. There was no broken nose. There was some blood. The problem with that, it lies in the fact that, and see, this is where you get into trouble with trolls, because they're not capable of comprehending, you know, working on real intellectual depth, and consequently they don't understand the point that was made this past Friday on the Horn. If you use either hand to punch someone in the nose and you bloody said nose, why, looky, you're going to have DNA on your hands. Of some, if not blood, some kind of DNA. Snot, for Christ's sakes. But it wasn't there. There was no DNA anywhere on Trayvon Martin. But that doesn't matter, Michael. That doesn't matter to these concerned trolls and various and sundry assorted freaks. What matters to them is that they have some plausible level of deniability for the degree to which racism is still rampant in this country. Okay? Now, we've had our fun. And that's probably the wrong phrase to use. But, you know, yeah, we had some, you know, Pat Robertson's a lunatic. And Rush Limbaugh is a drug-addled goob. But what do you do, and I mean this sincerely, what do you do when somebody over to the, well, the hometown paper right here where I am. What do you do when a so-called real live, honest-to-God member of the professional for-profit media begins doing saying things that are every bit as stupid as anything that would ever come out of the mouths of Rush Limbaugh or anybody else? Rush Limbaugh, Marion Robertson, anything from over at that website that rhymes with night fart. That's when you know you got a problem. Well, I mean, we know we've got a problem. A big problem. So it's about 7 minutes before the hour. We'll take our top of the hour break. This is Conversation Radio. Conversation Radio tends to work best when there's conversation involved instead of me just filibustering. So, you know, we'll get back to it. I'm going to, we'll take a little break. Regular phone lines work, 304-658-3333. So too does the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you want to jump in, either way is fine. Hey, thanks going out to Michael, who, being as how he is a neighbor of sorts, our buddy Scott has kicked in this evening. We only need to raise $70. And we will have fundraising taken care of for the evening. Yeah, Marty, you're right. I forgot to mention Alex Jones. Marty says, include Alex Jones in that. He's shown the colors I knew were there. There's lots of flags, and most of them are stars and bars and battle flags flying. You betcha. All right, so break and we come back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Are you to try to deny. Revelation and rumors begin to fly. Now you think about reaching out. Maybe get some help
from above.
Now you think about reaching out.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
A little reminder, have you ever been in the headonradionetwork.com chat room? It can get rather zany in there. Larry in the chat room observing, you know, hooded outerwear goes way back in the South. Jug of punch. I have a thermal hooded sweatshirt. In the winter, it's great for checking out the chicken coop. Waggy noting, you know, when it's raining, I pull up the hooded part of my BDU jacket. I know full well that I look like a creepy-ass cracker. Ag letting me know that Edward checked in a few minutes ago to remind her that cracker does not have the same racial overtones that the word that Flush Flimball is now so thrilled to have been apparently given carte blanche to use. Edward noting, and we remember the stories, the wonderful, wonderful stories from the book that Edward refuses to write about his wonderful extended family, that back in the day it was in common parlance in the Deep South. And in fact, cracker has nothing to do with saltines. It's a phrase that was used to refer to my Scots-Irish forebears and the fact that they cracked corn. Really? Yeah. Back before the Braves went from Boston, there's trouble with that name too, by the way, went from Boston to Milwaukee, and they went to Atlanta in the late 1960s. Back before then, there had been a rather famous, Triple-A baseball club, and they were the, anybody? Atlanta Crackers. Just saying. No, I said, what do you do? What do you do when there's a member of the for-profit media who is supposed to be respectable, although it turns out this guy's got quite the history, who runs down the road we frequently expect to be more well-traveled by the likes of Marion Robertson and America's oxymoron. Racism versus Reality by Richard Cohen, published yesterday in the Washington Post. Yeah, the same newspaper that brought you Woodward and Bernstein and yeah, gone are the days, and they ain't coming back. I don't like what George Zimmerman did, and I hate that Trayvon Martin is dead. Well, thank you for clearing that up, Dick. But speaking of dicks, by the way, Richard B. Dick, big time, five deaf Dick Cheney's daughter, Mary, has announced that she is running for the Senate seat being vacated in Wyoming by Mike Enzi. Republicans all over the country are saying to themselves, thanks for nothing, Mayor. But it gives us at least, well, the commercials will be interesting because they don't come much more hateful than Mary Cheney. So Richard Cohen lets us know that he doesn't like what George Zimmerman did, and he hates that Trayvon Martin is dead. But he continues, but I also can understand why Zimmerman was suspicious and why he thought Martin was wearing a uniform we all recognize. Huh? What is a uniform we all recognize? He says, I don't know whether Zimmerman is a racist. Well, Dick, why don't you go look at his old MySpace page and get back to us? But I'm tired of politicians
and others who have donned hoodies in solidarity with Martin, and who essentially suggest that for recognizing the reality of urban crime in the United States, I am a racist. Sensitive much, Dick? The hoodie blinds them as much as it did Zimmerman. Oh, I think we are projecting a little bit, aren't we? One of those who quickly donned a hoodie was Christine Quinn, the Speaker of the New York City Council. Quinn was hardly a lonesome panderer. Lonesome panderer? Sounds like a country and western crooner from the late 1930s. And here he is, the lonesome panderer, singing, "I shot him because of what he wore." Lesser politicians joined her, and as she did, pronounced Zimmerman a criminal. What George Zimmerman did was wrong, was a crime, Quinn said, before knowing all of the facts and before the jury uncooperatively found otherwise. She was half right. What Zimmerman did was wrong. It was not, by verdict of his peers, a crime. A little legal hair splitting here. Shooting a teenager or any other human being without justification is a crime. It doesn't stop being a crime just because a jury returned a verdict. The conduct remains a crime. And this is classic concern trolling. Where is the politician who will own up to the painful complexity of the problem? And really, it's complex? The pissant was told by a police dispatcher not to follow a young man and then did so anyway, got in over his head, and then killed the boy in cold blood. That's complex. And acknowledge the widespread fear of crime committed by young black males. Well, where's the fear of crime committed by young white males? Because, see, that's the problem. The crime statistics pretty well track along the demographic lines. Same thing with, for instance, food stamps. There are far more food stamp recipients who are white than are of other colors. But we don't talk about them. And Dick Cohen is not going to either. This does not mean that raw racism has disappeared. What does that mean, raw racism? You know what? There are different kinds of racism in this country. There's the institutional brand. There's the personal variety, the social, cultural variety. And frankly, you know, we've done the story. We've covered the stories on this program over the years. The guy who portrays Barack Obama as Curious George, you know, that one editorial cartoon. On and on and on. The guy with the watermelon wagon a couple of weeks ago. Down in North Carolina. Raw racism, I suppose, is what Richard Dick Cohen is, what he's thinking about there are the people, the unreconstructed, old school, halfway to the Klan, if not all the way, people who freely throw around the N-word and yuck. And some judgments are not the product of invidious stereotyping. It does mean, though, that the public knows young black males committed a disproportionate amount of crime. See, that is patently false. He says, in New York City, blacks make up a quarter of the population, yet they represent 78% of all shooting suspects, almost all of them young men. We know them from the nightly news. Well, you know, if it's on the news, it must be true, right? except for the fact that if it bleeds, it leads. Young black males do not commit a disproportionate amount of crime. They just don't. Then there's this justification for the stop and frisk program in New York. Let's see, we are 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth paragraph. I wish I had a solution to this problem, Dick Cohen writes. If I were a young black male and were stopped, please don't even go there, Dick, because you're not, you're never gonna be, and you have no cultural background with which to even finish that hypothetical. If I were a young black male and were stopped just on account of my appearance, I would feel violated. You don't even know the beginning of violated, Dick. The problem, and then this, oh yuck. The problems of the black underclass are hardly new. They're surely the product, don't call me Shirley, the product of slavery, the subsequent Jim Crow era, and the tenacious persistence of racism. This man knows absolutely nothing of the history of the settlement and subsequent population of this continent by white Europe. No clue whatsoever. They will be solved someday, but not probably with any existing programs. See, that's another one of those, concern troll ways of saying, well, we're just going to have to deal with it because, well, we can't acknowledge that we live in a racist culture. For want of a better word, the problem is cultural, and it will be solved when the culture somehow is changed. And, you know, that's what happens. Cultures just change. One day you go to bed with one culture and you wake up with one that's totally different because overnight it changed. From ugly duckling into swan, and there you are, and it's, you know, Star Trek world. But concerned troll that he is, Dick Cohen wants to talk honestly about the problem. And whenever one of these concerned trolls talks about talking honestly about the problem, what he generally means is he wants cover for his own inherent bias. It does no one any good to merely cite the number of stop and frisks involving black males without citing the murder statistics as well. Murder statistics? Well, there are more murders in this country committed by white folks than by folks of color, okay? All right, we've cited all right, so we're good, right? Citing the former and not the latter is an Orwellian exercise in political correctness. At one time, I thought Barack... Oh, dear God, here we go. It's his fault. At one time, I thought Barack Obama would bring the problem into the open and remove the racist stigma. Instead, he perpetuated it. And see, this one's making the rounds, too. Because here I've got... Now, where are you? Where are you? Oh, there you are. There you are, Lou. This is the meme that's going around. Fox Business host Lou Dobbs on Monday promoted the conspiracy theory that the Department of Justice somehow organized protests over the killing of Trayvon Martin, joining with some in right-wing media who claim Attorney General Eric Holder is a radical racist. Ain't much difference between old Lou and old Dick. We'll go into Lou in a minute here. Let's get back to Dick. He perpetuated it. Barack Obama personally perpetuated racism in the United States. In his acclaimed Philadelphia speech on race, he cited his grandmother as a woman who once confessed her fear of black men who passed her by on the street. How about the former Barry Obama? When, you know, anytime you see Barry Obama, you know you're dealing with somebody that's been hanging out in the, you know, hanging out in the teabaggier sections of the internet. When he was a Columbia University student living on the lip of then dangerous Harlem, the lip of then dangerous lip. Did he never have the same fear? There's no doubt in my mind that Zimmerman profiled Martin and, braced by a gun, set off in quest of heroism. The result was a quintessentially American tragedy, the death of a young man understandably suspected because he was black and tragically dead for the same reason. See how the concern trolls just kind of throw, the right-wing concern trolls just kind of throw this stuff up there to see if it'll stick. Because it's an entirely different sentence if minus one word. The result was a quintessentially American tragedy, the death of a young man suspected because he was black. Then we can have a conversation over whether or not that level of suspicion is a manifestation of the ongoing racism that taints the entirety of this nation and ever has and probably ever will, barring some sort of ugly duckling into swan sea change. We can have that. But no, when you throw that adverb in there, the result was a quintessentially American tragedy, the death of a young man understandably suspected because he was black. Understandably. Because it's understandable. It's understandable that a kid who lives in the same housing community would say on a rainy evening, you know what, I'm going to, you know what, before it gets too much later, I'm going to go up and get me a can of iced tea and some Skittles. I'll be back in a minute, Dad. Okay, son, hurry back. And never comes home. Because he was understandably gunned down, because he was understandably suspected, because he was black. And tragically dead for the same reason. What's the same reason? Because he was black? Or because he was understandably suspicious? Is not the entire discussion about hoodies racist in and of itself? Is there not something inside that trope that says that we of the privileged community insist on establishing a code of what a young man may or may not wear? And if he chooses to go outside our tolerance limits, it's okay to gun him down in cold blood? Isn't that in the way of the essence of what we're talking about here? Because, see, there's a long line of this. 60 years ago, polite white society would bitch about the fact that, that men of color would wear something, you know, when going out clubbing or whatever, they would wear something called a zoot suit. And it was an over-the-top fashion form. The jacket was extra long. The trousers extra, you know, extra roomy and billowing and... It was a mockery of white fashion in its way. It was ostentatious and flashy. And white America complained. Fast forward 60 years, and you've got a bunch of tight-ass weirdos, white folks, all worked up about where a young man wears his pants and what portion, if any, of his underwear is visible.
when in fact, even in some cases, when the young man doesn't know it, it is again a form of protest. So white America, including Dick Cohen here, is maintaining, through the filter of his privilege, the right to pass on who and who should not die based upon a clothing list that is constantly arbitrarily updated and amended, not by the people who are wearing the clothing, but by the people who aren't. Ron and Raleigh writing in, Hey, Bob, don't forget paternalistic racism. This is the racism that looks upon black people as just these pitiful children that need the direction of the great white parents. Yep. I understand now, Ron continues. Racism is the product of the fevered imaginings of black people. It really doesn't exist, and as soon as we stop playing the race card, things will just be just fine. That's about the size of it. It's only racism if it is acknowledged to be racism by the white privilege community, which is, of course, the entire concept turned on its ear. The offender does not get to define the terms of the offense. But we now apparently have a list in this country of clothing that can and cannot be worn, and if an individual is seen wearing it, well, he may just have to die. And Dick Cohen doesn't want to see any more people out there with any degree of power whatsoever donning that clothing and reminding him, Dick, of his own prejudices. And Marty says, I assure you, not just white folks look askance at young black men wearing their pants below their hips. Some of us fossilized older black folk also shake our heads. Yeah, but you shake your heads for different... You shake your head for... Maybe I'm wrong, Marty. But you shake your head for a different reason than white folks do. Because just as white people can never, ever really fully step outside their privilege, well... It's awfully hard to understand 500 years of embedded white terror. And it is. It's terror. It's gut-bending fear. Well, there's a whole lot more of them than they are of us. Goodness gracious, if they ever get the guns, they're going to come in here and rape our white women and kill us white men. And you get the idea. It motivates almost every aspect of American life through the early settlement days, the importation and introduction of slavery, all the way to the present day. Marty, you see those the pants too low, and you think, you know, if I'm not putting words in your mouth, you think, come on, let's have a little dignity. But I was actually taught a word for what that is. It's like ostentatious. It's a way for someone who has no social, political, or cultural voice to manifest, even if they realize it or not, to manifest dissent.
Yeah, and Irish Dave pointing out that Dick Cohen really is a complete dick. This goes back to 2010, by Jack Stoof. Richard Cohen loves sexual harassment. Oh, he has a rap sheet a mile long. But, and I don't even know how to, we probably need to transition away to some other topics, but I don't want to do it blithely. Okay, enough of that. Let's talk about something else. I don't want to do that. That's not in the nature of this program. At all. But if it's okay, we will go and talk about some other Titanic Tuesday materials, being ever mindful that something else may crop up that reminds us that this story is far from over. Because see, Trayvon is one. Isaac pointed out to me earlier today another case. This ain't Florida. This is out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It concerns a man named John Henry Spooner, 76 years of age. And jury selection has taken place in his trial. He's charged with gunning down 13-year-old a 13-year-old young man named Simmons, Darius Simmons. First-degree intentional homicide, May 2012. Darius Simmons was his next-door neighbor. Spooner, and it doesn't exactly tell us whether he justifiably or unjustifiably suspected this, Spooner suspected Darius Simmons, 13 years old, of breaking into his Milwaukee home and stealing guns. So 2 days after Spooner's guns went missing, he confronted 13-year-old Darius Simmons on the street and demanded that he give back guns that he did not know Darius Simmons had. Darius Simmons said, "I didn't steal anything from you." That is when John Henry Spooner, at a distance of 5 feet, shot Darius Simmons. Darius Simmons tried to run and then, trying to run away, Spooner shot him in the back. He did all this while Darius Simmons' mother watched her son go down. And then he paced back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth on the sidewalk until the police got there. Defense counsel in this case is a guy named Franklin Gimble. And apparently Spooner is going to lodge an insanity defense. Gimble says he will concede that Spooner shot Darius Simmons, kind of hard not to, but that Simmons didn't intend to kill the boy. Now, unless the law is weirdly, weirdly, weirdly different in Wisconsin than it is in much of the rest of the country, in most parts of the country, one is inferred to intend the logical, reasonable, and probable consequences of one's act. In other words, if you shoot somebody and they die, you're on the hook for killing the person. Because, I just meant to wing him a little bit. Well, no, if you discharge a firearm at somebody, you must understand that there is a distinct likelihood you're going to kill them. Defense counsel says he's going to enter he's going to bring on an expert witness who will testify that Spooner didn't know right from wrong because he was mentally ill. Now, he's mentally ill, and yet somehow or another, he's not so mentally ill that Milwaukee Alderman Bob Donovan wouldn't sit down and have breakfast with him. Spooner told Donovan he lost $3,000 worth of shotguns in a burglary that week and was frustrated with police. He also said he was dying of lung cancer. Watch this space for details. But this is America. Gun mad America. Oh, I'm sorry. He was mentally ill. Why did he have a house full of guns? Well, because the right of a well-regulated, insane militia shall not be abridged. Spooner. Remember the name. 76 years old, point blank into the chest. Charged with first degree intentional homicide. Is that the same thing as first degree murder? I think we kind of need to know that. Because it's murder, unless there's a separate category for young black males. Sweet Jesus. Let's go to the phones. Bill's with us, calling from Cleveland. Are you there, Agnes? Okay, whole lot of silence going on. Oh yeah, did I not? I'm sorry, Isaac. Did I not mention that? Young Darius Simmons was of course black, and 76-year-old Mr. Spooner was white, folks. Yeah, that should clear that up. Okay, Agnes, let's bring on Bill.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, not a heck of a lot. How about you?
Who am I speaking with?
It's Bob.
Oh. Let me turn up my phone. Somehow or other I got a buzz on the phone. It might have been Agnes calling me to reconnect or something.
Oh, okay.
Well, first of all, man, I had a hell of a good time with the Blue Society, and it was like watching my kids up there. Funny feeling. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I missed my radio just went out in the bedroom, I think.
Don't worry about it.
Well, as long as it's not coming in on you.
No, you're fine.
Okay. Yeah, so I missed last night's show, but all I heard all weekend was, of course, the case in Florida, and I'm disgusted, but because I knew guys like Mr. Zimmerman who wanted to become cops, and, you know, there's a part of the police entrance test in Cleveland. Well, they used to be where it was a psych test. And I know a couple guys who weren't acceptable because of their grading in the psych test. Gun toters who were not unwilling to use them at the slightest provocation. And that's not good, you know?
No, it's not.
It's just too much. And I've talked to a couple of the fellas, you know, that I'm friendly with through the show. And nobody's real pleased with it. We weren't surprised, though. This is like, you know, it really bothers me, Bob. Are we going freaking backwards here or what?
Well, we are, and it's not like it's an accident, Bill. We're going backwards because there are people who are dragging us backwards.
ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, was behind that Stand Your Ground law in Florida. They're dragging us backwards. The National Republican Rifle Association is dragging us backwards.
Yeah, they'd like to take us back to pre-Depression days, wouldn't they?
Oh, no, they want to take us back to...
1890.
Well, they want to take us back to shoot them if you got them, you know, wild, rough and ready, rugged individualism, you know, that America that never existed.
Yeah. Well, it didn't exist. Well, I don't know how the old Western movies, I know there was a lot of gun toting going on in and out of towns. I mean, people were wearing 44s and 5s all over the goddamn place. It was unbelievable. Unless those movies were complete fallacies. But I know the OK Corral actually happened. And that the Earp brothers were just this side of being illegal themselves.
Oh, they were thugs.
Yeah. And that was the part of the whole problem with the, the fire departments in New York City, the volunteer fire departments, they'd race up to a house and they'd have a fight between themselves to see who got to put out the fire as the house merrily burned down around. At least that's from what I've been able to read through history. I've been able to glean. I don't know if you ever heard or read anything about that stuff.
Not really, no. But that's okay.
Yeah, there's a very good book, and I forget the author. It was on the New York draft riots. And this guy went into depth about how badly the Irish were living in New York City. How about living in basement? They weren't really basement. They were holes in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And some people were living
kind of the way some people in Las Vegas are living in underground tunnels now.
Now, see, I hadn't heard that. But fill me in on that.
Oh no, it's real. There are people who are homeless, who are living underground in makeshift. You know, do the best they can, and in the Vegas area. Dr. John mentioned it one night not too long back. The stories are out there. But, of course, you know, you mentioned the 1864 draft riots in New York City. We have to understand what those were. Basically, what those riots amounted to, and it was as ugly a piece of racism as has ever existed in this country.
They burned an orphanage.
Oh, Irish immigrants went on the rampage and basically used the riots as an excuse to kill every human being of dark skin that they could set their eyes on. It was murder done wholesale.
Go after the other poor people instead of the people that have their foot on your throat. Go after the other guys as poor as you are.
Right.
Divide and conquer.
Well, and, you know, and once again, that proves to be one of the single most effective disorganizing tools this country has ever seen. You know, keeping, because, you know, it goes back into the 17th century, it goes back into the 16th century. You know, tell people that they are different, tell equally poor, equally abused people that once, okay, you got it bad, but you don't have it as bad as those. You're better than them.
Yes, you're better than them, even though you're as bad off as them. Yeah, that's been a divide and conquer thing in your part of the world and ours. Up here it was strong and it's still strong. I'll give you an example. One of the ethnic neighborhoods in this city where their people came from what we could now call Yugoslavia. They were part of the Yugoslavian Federation. And they came here, and they bought up a neighborhood, and it was their neighborhood. We had 33 councilmen here at one time because we had a councilman for every ethnic group had to have representation in city council. And, of course, the power structure wanted to keep cutting that number of councilmen down because that way there's less people you had to bribe. I think that's
cheap
how cheap you guys
cheap
are.
Bastards.
Yeah. I mean, the tightness with the dollar is unbelievable. And corruption, they say I learned it in my own family when my old man got busted with a pound of reefer in 1946. And his brother, my uncle, worked for the for the fellas, and they took care of it for him. He had to make a payment, and he had to go to my uncle had to go to a judge's house to pay it. So, anybody who thinks corruption is brand new,
no, there ain't nothing new about it at all.
Yeah, that divide and conquer thing is real, very real.
And potent. It works very, very well.
Yeah. And that's what talk radio is used for today by the power structure.
Sure. That is a very, very cogent observation, Bill, because that has been the entire modus operandi of right-wing talk radio going back to its earliest days.
Yeah.
Up to and including Father Coughlin.
Oh, God, going that far back. Yeah, he actually was a Roosevelt supporter for a short time.
Yeah.
And then he came out against him. And I have my doubts about Huey Long's assassination. I sometimes think that the power structure wanted to get rid of him, too. Whether you believe him or not, he was saying a lot of things that sounded good to a working-class person.
Well, and he scared the bejesus out of the FDR folks, and that is why.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that we have Social Security not so much because of FDR, but because of Huey Long.
Huey Long, and who is the...
Because what'll happen is anytime there is an idea from one of the far margins of a political movement in this country, if it's good enough, it will be co-opted by the so-called mainstream. So that's how you go from Huey Long's Share the Wealth and Every Man a King to getting Social Security, because it was a way of diffusing some rather serious political tensions that Huey Long was fostering. It worked.
Yes, it did. Bismarck put through Social Security that, you know, and I would not call him a communist, of course, or a socialist, or anything else, but Bismarck had the idea if you reward people who are building your nation, it'll work for you in the end. And you give them a stipend. I think he instituted a form of Social Security in Germany in the 1890s or 1880s.
Sure, that's Bismarck, yeah.
Yeah, and he was not exactly what you'd call a liberal or a liberal.
No, he was, Bismarck was a visionary. And he was, he was the master of realpolitik.
Yeah.
And he recognized far better to provide some sort of minimum degree of subsistence to people instead of having them go for the pitchforks and torches and come up and start lopping the heads off of Junkers.
Well, yeah, his whole reason for being was to unite Germany around the Hohenzollern dynasty. And that's why they fought a war against Denmark to grab a little territory, one against Austria to shut that Germanic-speaking group up, and showed the Franz Joseph that his empire wasn't as good as theirs.
And you've got to remember the revolutions of 1848 that had swept Europe, especially Central Europe, were fresh in a lot of minds back then. A lot of the folks who got their butts whipped in the attempt left Europe. You know, I mean, they, as we've noted on this program before, they went to places like Indiana, they went to places like Texas, they went to places like Wisconsin
and built a
brilliant little democratic culture up there. I mean, it's the democratic culture of the 48ers that is in many ways still in the process of being dismantled by Scott Walker in Wisconsin.
Yeah. That's where a lot of my great-grandfather didn't come over until 71 because he wasn't going to fight in or 70 he came over. He didn't want to fight in a third war for Kaiser Wilhelm I. Because the way he told my grandfather, his son born in this country, was the odds are against you. There's only so many bullets you can dodge. And you never know if you're out there fighting, which one's going to get you.
Well, you know, if you've won two out of three, and you start going two out of two, and you go for three out of three, it's almost a sure thing that the law of averages is going to catch up.
Well, there was a hell of a lot of corruption under Napoleon III in France. And it proved to be a decisive downfall for his country. And there was a lot of craziness in France after 1870. Well, they sat and counted their losses from 1870 and were building an army and a plan to beat the Germans again.
Yeah, it didn't work. That one didn't work either.
No, well, I guess it did in the long run, but what a horrendous situation, you know.
Well, no, if you read The Guns of August, you will find that that there were a lot of people who were screaming at the French general staff because, well, the French plan was to advance, attack.
Yeah, into Alsace-Lorraine, and here the Germans tried to use Belgium as a highway, and that brought the British in full tilt after a treaty signed after Napoleon I, I believe, to guarantee Belgian neutrality.
Exactly.
And the Germans forgot about that, but it seems to be the same story. It's just repeated, Bob, and people never seem to learn. This country, you know, the highest number of college graduates we ever had in this country was immediately after World War II with the GI Bill. How the hell do they ever get the GI Bill past the fascists? I mean, the right wingers.
Well, because they were in the I'm sorry, I'm losing a word here. They were on the wane and not the wax at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the truth. Truman served on some kind of an investigative committee during World War II on finances that were being stolen for the war effort. And in his biography, he commented on some of the Republicans who were on the same team and how they put some of their own social class in jail and how much he applauded that act. Because that's what doesn't happen anymore. Now, if you're allied with somebody for any reason, you're going to get nothing out of anybody else. You're going to get nothing out of them. And they say this, I keep thinking, man, if that guy Zimmerman had come after me like that, I would have shot first in those days because I was armed because of guys like him, bully boys. That's, bully boys. And when you travel late at night in a band, you were God knows where if your car broke down. And here you are just sitting there, and cop, what's that? And the city of Cleveland, the guys were not real responsive at the time, and they didn't have a great reputation at the time. And individuals on the force, there were great individuals. I knew a friend of mine who was a great guy who finished as a plainclothesman. And their job seemed to be a lot different than the guy out there stopping. I had a guy stop me out in the suburban area for an illegal right on red one night, Bob. On the floor of my car was a paper bag, which had a bag of funny-looking green smokable substance. It's a 38 special that I had bought from a Cleveland cop.
I never knew it came in a paper bag.
Yeah. And he didn't notice it. I bet this guy was sorry. Man, if he had arrested me with that in my possession, he'd have been the talk of the station for the next 5 years. I won't keep you going, but it's the
official.
Same.
Obama's executive order 16303 now gives his government total martial law powers over the population in an emergency.
Had to make that go away. That was
one
of those.
That's not a surprise, by the way. Who was that truthful man?
That was some asshole.
Well, the government's always had this power. You ever see the pictures of Eisenhower and he didn't want to be there. He made critical remarks about it later. When MacArthur was running the bonus marchers out of Washington.
Yeah.
By burning up their encampments and chasing them out. But before I go, I got to talk. There's a station out of the up New England states of 50,000 water. And they used to have a good professional talk show host who could talk about anything from Boston diners to you name it, you know. Just in the middle of the night, it was just good. Lull you right to sleep, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had this happens to be a young woman, but I don't care for who it was. But when she says something, she'll make a statement, and she'll follow it up with, like there's somebody else sitting next to her. And I'm thinking, what the hell kind of a present? Is that a new technique that's being taught for talk show hosts to not only say something, but then to agree with themselves?
Oh, that's just, what?
She'll make a statement of fact, and then she'll say, like there's two people just agreed with her.
Like, she'll say, and the sun came up today,
Yeah.
That sounds like that guy who replaced Goober on Andy Griffith after Barney left, and then Goober left, and right, Andy? Remember that guy?
It makes you wonder after a while, am I crazy? Or does she just agree with herself? And she's not a dummy. I mean, I know where she's coming from, but, that's one thing that was bugging the hell out of me. And to say, what is going on with talk radio? It used to be a wide open forum. In years gone
well,
by.
But it got consolidated within the framework of icky, nasty, right-wing dominance of licenses and Clear Channel, Sinclair, Cumulus. You know, they're all again. It's a huge gang of right-wing punks.
Yeah. And you and I know how tough it is to get a job in radio. I was talking to Agnes for a while about how I grew up listening to radio drama for kids. Yeah, the Lone Ranger, Sergeant Preston, the usual.
Travel with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. Yeah.
The movie's falling flat out of space, by the way.
Yeah, well, the right wing is working hard to make sure that it does, because it doesn't. They're mad at the movie because it challenges the idea of white rightness in stealing the better part of an entire continent from people who were already here.
Yeah, I don't know what the plot was, but if that's it, yeah, I can see why they're up to what they're doing. It gets pretty old pretty fast, that kind of stuff. And I don't know, maybe I often think that the radio generation, we had to use a lot of imagination to visualize what they're talking about. And it must have been great for actors, because you stood there, you could be standing there in your underwear and what they used to wear, garter socks.
I never figured out how those worked.
I guess they worked. I never wore them myself.
All I know is, my most comfortable pair of shoes have gone to their long home, Bill. I walked to the grocery store last night after the show program was over, and as I was walking back, I kept hearing this kathwap, 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 and so I...
You're losing your soul, Bob. You should have gone and seen a minister.
Well, yeah, and that's what happened. About... I'd say 3/8 to nearly half of the front end of this one shoe had opened up, and my gel insert had gone slipping out the front. It's completely open now, and it would, oh dear, never a dull moment.
I shouldn't laugh. I always tell people my eyes went bad. I went down to Akron, and Ernie Strangely down there, he took that over from another guy who had built the Cathedral of Tomorrow. No, the Cathedral of Tomorrow. Yeah, that's what they called it. And one thing the guy has is he has a pretty good buffet restaurant down there. It was a good place to go on Sunday, because I was with some woman down there and for a while. And, of course, we'd go over there to eat once in a while. But I always say, yeah, I went down there to have him cure my eye problems, and he slapped me in the side of the head, and now I can't hear either. So... So much for that idea. Anyway, I'll let you go, because I'm sure you got other folks who... But, yeah, I was bummed by... Oh, you read the story about the announcement that came out of San Francisco about the officers on the South Korean airline?
Yes.
Oh, we had a guy up here in Cleveland, a newspaper columnist. He used to do a thing that they ran every year. It was a football game in Korea between Busan State and I forget who the other team was, but they all had names. The big star was a guy was named, I think it was Won Sok Hung Lo or something like that. And he was an elusive runner because people would go to tackle him and they'd see his socks and they'd lose control. They'd lose, concentration. And, it was nasty, but it really, the fact that it fooled this professional news person. Come on, Bob, how long do you think you would have read
those?
It
didn't just fool a professional news person, Bill. It fooled the news director. It fooled the producer, the assistant producer, the floor director, the reader, the person who was inputting data into the teleprompter, the person who was rolling it. Fox.
Well,
it fooled Fox.
Pay attention to what they do or not. One of my favorites that I talked to you about a long time ago was some woman announcer was talking about a shooting down in Appomattox in Virginia.
Appomattox?
Fox.
Yeah, with the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
American history knew the name of Appomattox. I guess I know more than I'm supposed to
You know more than you give yourself credit for knowing, Bill.
Well, as I say, there was a time that I made a half-assed decent living playing blues, which was not that much, but it was not that easy because the market for it wasn't the same as, when I tell people I went up to a place in Detroit, this Grandy Ballroom, and opened up for Cream, and the next trip was Steppenwolf and Three Dog Night, and the next was the MC5, who were a bunch of guys I had met in a burned-out apartment in 1967 in Detroit. And stopping in Chicago at a Sunday night jam session in a club where Muddy Waters played. I mean, this was like, for a guy like me, that was like going to Rome and meeting the Pope for a good Catholic, you know?
Sure.
To being anywhere. A buddy of mine was in Musicville last night in Tennessee, you know. Why can't I think of the name of that city? The big music city.
Nashville.
I think of Nashville, I think of John B. Hood getting his head handed to him by George Thomas. And George Thomas had a full division of black soldiers fighting under him. And
that was the one that drove the southern aristocracy. Well, that's just not sporting. That ain't hardly sporting.
Well, I know is that Hood went north with 55,000 men, and when he finally made it below the Tennessee River, he had about 25,000 left.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them were men who had just woke up enough to say, I'm done. This is crazy. I'm going home.
Yeah.
And I'm leaving, you know, and I can't blame them one bit. But it just bothers me that a handful of leaders was able to kill 6 million Americans from every section of the country. When you think about it in retrospect, it's so saddening that, first of all, you know, I always tell people, I say, you're going to be here long after me and your kids will be. And, you know, maybe that's why they're so afraid of the change of population, you know, and why they want everybody, no abortions, have 10 kids, go back to those days. And after you're born, the hell with you. You know, that you and I know that, you know.
Right. Hey, by the way, Michael just heard your reference to Appomattox.
Yeah.
He said Appomattox on both your houses.
Ah, good for him. Anyway, I'll let you go. But as I say, I am disgusted, of course, with it. Because maybe they went for the wrong charge. Maybe it should have been third degree. Should have been manslaughter. Something you can prove. But I know a lot of guys that if Mrs. Zimmerman had met up with them, he might be the one laying there.
Yeah, and again, that's why I hope there will be a civil trial, because I want to hear that man have to testify. I want to see him absolutely wither under the blistering gaze of a really, really mean trial lawyer.
Well, see, I had an acquaintance similar to that, a guy who kept trying to take the police test, and you know, most of us knew him, so he must be failing the psychological part, because we knew him well enough to know. And I remember one time he needed to borrow money, and he gave me a 357 to hold on to, and he paid me back, because it would have been nice to get something like that for free. But on the other hand, Bob, I never went over carrying a 2-inch 38, because to me, if you're going to get somebody, the closer you are to them to save your ass with a small 38 is necessary.
Well, look, most shootings in this country take place in a space of less than 3 feet.
Yeah.
That's a fact. Hey, Bill, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You better be able to prove that this guy was trying to...
Yeah.
Trying to kill you, not just trying to attack you, but trying to kill you.
Right.
My only problem with it is there's countless stories about they find Joe Smith, Sam Pobis, whoever, and nobody saw anything.
Yeah, everybody, right. No, I didn't see nothing.
Yeah, that's the problem that I see having been around. I've seen a booze, you know. We sold, on a good night in the old days, we'd move, and we're talking 20 years ago, we'd move way over $1,000 worth of liquor in a small bar, you know, and that was, you know, they weren't pouring it down the sink. They were pouring it down somebody's throat, and that much booze, you know, and somebody's got a problem. You name the problem, but if they're drunk enough, they want to fight over it, and they don't give a damn what they do to somebody.
Well, that's the truth.
And yeah, I think Zimmerman was very typical of cop wannabes that I had known, and policemen friends of mine had talked about people in the bar, and they'd say, yeah, that guy always talks to me. He wants to do the same job I'm doing until, you know, he's tested and he just flunks real. He's lucky they don't hand him a jacket to wear backwards out the door, if you get my drift. You know,
yep.
One of the buttons down the back that you can't open yourself. Yeah, that one.
Right.
That's an old reference, but it was real, you know. And there was too much of that going down. And this guy, I mean, what would he have done if this other guy had been a real criminal? If the guy he was...
That guy would be sitting on death row in Florida now.
Yeah, you got it.
And that's a fact. Hey, Bill, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Yeah, buddy. Good night.
All right. Bye now. 5 minutes past the hour, and let's go to John.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Oh, not too bad. It was a great conversation, real interesting.
I always enjoy talking to Bill.
Oh, sorry?
I said I always enjoy talking to him.
Yeah, I always enjoy hearing from him. That clip from Limbaugh was just tears me up inside that in the wake of this Zimmerman verdict. The people of conscience, they're good people who are taking this and sort of reflecting on, you know, where are we as a society? What does this mean for us? What is the justice system actually for? Who does it protect? And on and on and on, you know, really asking reflective questions amid grief and being upset. And Limbaugh takes this as an opportunity to apparently just start deploying the N-word with impunity. The disconnect there is really just kind of tearing me up.
It should. I think that's just proof of conscience, John. You know, remember, when we talk about Limbaugh, this is a guy who once told a caller, call me back when you take the bone out of your nose, who suggested that all mugshots look like Jesse Jackson. Okay, I mean, there's a reason it tears you to pieces.
Yeah. And it seems like this is now the cover he was looking for.
Yes.
Just to bring out the full-on racism in the open. No more dog whistling.
No, it's absolutely, it's out in the open. They get to say what they've been itching to say now. I mean, And it's all going to be framed, John, within the, well, they get to say it, why can't we? as if there was some sort of reverse privilege at work here.
Right. And it's still all in service of money and power. You and Bill nailed it when you said, you know, divide and conquer. That is the goal here. That's always been the reason that we've been told to make such a big deal out of racial difference or gender difference. Because as long as folks are concentrated on the other, then they don't sit back and reflect on their own situation and say, wait a minute, it's the people that are screwing me, that are telling me that I need to be really concerned about these frightening others. You know, so he's, in doing this, in letting his racist flag fly, he's still serving corporate money, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And it operates on so many different levels, John. You know, it's this, and it's, you know, the stuff that Howard Zinn talks about and that you have talked about, the class division based on race, you know, that's entirely artificial. But my God, you know, it's there when the guy says, well, I don't need to join the union because they just want my money every month. Well, who told him that? Well, the company told him that.
Yeah,
it's, you know, in the mine wars of West Virginia at the beginning of the 20th century, it was not an accident that when the Appalachian people began to be restive with the chains that were being placed on them, that the strike breakers that were brought in were largely non-English speaking Italians and Central Europeans.
Yeah,
but oddly enough, they were actually, and you know, I was talking about 1848 with Bill a little bit ago. They were actually better prepared to organize than the people that they were expected to strike break on, because they had a better class consciousness.
Yeah,
and so the Italians and the Hungarians and the Poles and the Slavs jumped right on it. And began, and they were fairly simple to organize because they understood class, where we just don't.
That Gesellschaft training, like Dr. Bill talked about. Yeah, it's absolutely true, and I think that the idea of reflection on sort of the criminal justice system, like you're saying, yeah, you know, actual crime track demographics. You know, I mean, the most populous demographic group commits the most crimes. But there's a big disconnect here, and folks are really talking about this, which is interesting in the wake of this. There's a big difference between crimes that are committed and crimes that are prosecuted. And that's an effect here, and we see it in everything from, you know, Wall Street, white collar crime, the difference between crack and cocaine.
Yep.
But I think people are looking at this Zimmerman verdict and the Trayvon Martin case, and they're saying, you know, we're not critiquing the idea of gun culture and gun violence and media representations of black folks and non-white folks. This is an example of what happens when the justice system sanctifies certain kinds of crime, either by acquitting folks or by simply not prosecuting them. So in that sense, you know, crime stats really are very skewed, but they're skewed by race and class and gender to some degree.
And even by crimes themselves.
Yeah.
You know, types of crimes, larceny versus, you know, property crimes versus crimes of human violence, for instance.
Sure, white folks commit more of white collar crimes, larceny crimes, but the prosecution rate is so much less than drug thefts and homicide. You know, so it creates this false image that all of the crime is committed by black folks. Nonsense.
Right, and
crime committed by white folks, but it's not pursued, and it doesn't make the news. It isn't up on the front page.
Right, and flowing from that, then you have to deal with the disproportionate incarceration rates and the disproportionate execution rates, which, you know, which apply brutally to America's population of color, far more so than they do to any. And again, the general reminder goes out that white is a very, very fluid term.
Sure.
I mean, I was, in fact, I was talking earlier today. Our buddy, the Angry Indian, just checked in with me to see what was going on, and we were talking. He actually said to me that that he's you know, turned other people onto the show who were like, "Wow, I didn't know there were white people like him." And yeah. And at the one at the same time, you go, "Yeah, that's kind of damn sad," and the other you go, "Well, you know, that's not, you know, I'm honored." But even the concept of whiteness, John. I mean, there is. Tell me if I'm just getting this completely wrong. It is not even possible to discuss white this or white that and be even remotely accurate. And of course, yeah. You know, I like to go way thousands of years back. You know, look at a map of Europe as it was being conquered by the Romans, and there were the Belgae and the Sicari, whatever, all these different tribes, and some were Celtic and some were Slavic and some were Germanic and some were if you had looked at an ancient Roman and said white people, they would which who what. Because it would have been an entirely alien, foreign concept to them.
Europe created itself, and it created itself when it started to encounter folks that it decided were others, and that was during the great age of exploration and the Enlightenment, right? So we go around the world, and we start to find people who live very differently and worship different gods, and, oh, my God, don't have concepts of money and property. This is a real problem. And, you know, they look different from us, so we can identify them first as non-Christian, and then gradually, and Edmund Morgan talks about this, the historian we lost last week, a really great historian, talks about how, you know, a gradual transition in 17th century Virginia from referring to enslaved people, enslaved Africans, as simply non-Christian, to referring to them as black. And the reason that this happens is to stop the potential for organization among white indentured servants and black enslaved, well, first indentured servants and then enslaved people. So, yeah, the whole concept of whiteness can't exist until there is an other, and the other is created because of economic forces, not because there's any validity to color difference. I mean, obviously we put a lot of importance on color difference, but there's nothing intrinsically different about non-white people that is obvious. And Rome is a great example of that.
Yeah, the Limbaugh clip, I think, was as disturbing to you as it was to me and vice versa. The cluelessness that has to obtain in that individual's mind to be able to say, I can say it about a Chinaman down at the laundry.
Right. Yeah, I caught that.
But the thing is, he's talking to an audience for whom he is cherished because he's not politically correct.
Right.
And we go back to what we've talked about that in the past, that, you know, that's just another way of saying we object to not being, we object to people calling us out when we use the N-word.
Yeah, or when you let your privileged flag fly. You know, this is the idea of political correctness is just this really just screwed up notion that there's literally no difference between any two individual people, regardless of their history, their class, their gender, their race. All those things are incredibly important because we make them important, and they open up all kinds of doors of opportunity and chances in life. And by talking so proudly about how, oh, I'm not politically correct because everybody's equal, you know, it's nonsense. It denies these very real structural forces that exert different influences on different people.
And about which certain people remain utterly clueless. Marty just sent me a tweet that came from Faux John Madden, F-A-U-X.
Okay.
George Zimmerman, no jail time. Plaxico Burress served 2 years for shooting himself. America!
Yeah, America. Ain't it great? Yeah, I did make that connection, too. Yeah, shooting himself. Of course, there's the terrible story about the black woman who shot at her husband because he was going to beat on her, and now she's going to prison for that.
I was reminded of the case. I forget who sent it along, and I apologize for that. But I was reminded of the case that I saw, and you know, this goes back to a couple of months ago. The dateline on this story, June 6th, okay, a month and a week ago, the story of Ezekiel Gilbert out of Texas. He shot and killed Lenora Ivy Frago on Christmas Eve. He offered to pay her for sex, and she wouldn't give back the $150 that he paid her. So then he used deadly force to because Texas has a statute that says you can use deadly force to retrieve stolen property at night. So he killed her in cold blood. All right. She was 21 years old. She was critically injured by a gunshot wound to the neck, died several months later. He got away with it. The jury let him off the same way they let off George Zimmerman.
Because property is king.
Right.
Jesus.
I mean, it reminds me of some of the approaches we have to take with the AIC Act. You know, you would think if a human being had a conscience, you could go in and tell somebody about the AIC Act and say, you know, we need you to sign on to this because, frankly, people deserve not to be poisoned in their homes just because of where they live. But for some people, that will work, John. Some people, yeah, you have to go in and say, listen, the Constitution's most sacred protection is of our right to the quiet enjoyment of our property.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't quietly enjoy your property if it's having toxic dust rain down on it every day.
Yeah.
And frankly, that boggles my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we want to pass this. I don't get the obsession with property. I guess I never will. But it's there.
Well, we've always had it and been willing to bend iron rules.
Yeah.
You know, the West for expansion, the dispersal of Native folks, you know, that was the idea in English common law by the time America was colonized was that if land is enclosed, if it's improved, if it's worked, then the right to ownership goes to the people who do the work, you know. That goes way back to, you know, Adam Smith and even before that. But, of course, what happens when white folks, Europeans, encounter the Hopi or the Navajo with their, you know, fenced pastures and their orchards and their cornfields? Clearly worked, enclosed land that was improved, but it didn't matter. You know, still there for appropriation.
Right.
The property's always been sacrosanct to the point where we'll take it even when, by our own rules, we shouldn't.
And devil take the hindmost. It's,
yeah,
well,
I guess.
I don't see any evidence that we're stepping away from that. I'm dealing with things with the AIC Act where, you know, people are frustrated that their concerns about, you know, we've had this conversation in the past, a pure environmental argument they feel should be sufficient, and we shouldn't have to talk about health rights or human rights or health impacts. It should be enough to say that the mayflies are dying.
Right.
And
yeah,
in a perfect world, it should, John. That should be enough, because we should have enough. We should have enough intellectual capacity to realize that, you know, if the marker species start dying off, we're next. But it's not enough for a lot of people, because, you know, you brought up that the reasoned self-interest argument the other night, and you know, until you've got so-called skin in the game, people tend to just sit back and say, oh, well, that's how it is. And it's brutal to contemplate.
Yeah, it's a really effective argument to shut down any chance of community or shared sacrifice. I mean, you have to give it that at the very least. But anyway, I'm gonna get out of your way here. But again, thanks for the work you do, and I'll be in touch about reaching out to Senator Gillibrand also.
All right, I really do appreciate it. I've been sending out requests for meetings. Oh God, I can't even count that. There's not that many people in the Senate, but I've got a bunch of letters out.
Outstanding. Well, thanks for your work. I appreciate it, Bob, and I'll be in touch.
Hey, John, thanks for the insights. I really do appreciate it. Thank you very kindly.
All right. Take care.
Have a good evening. Bye now. Dr. John calling from New York. And it's about, coming up on half past the hour. I need to take, sorry, I know we're almost done with the program, but I got to take a break. And so we'll do that and then come back with, any further ideas you want to bring to the table. And there's some really, really sort of titanic right-wing wit stories out there waiting to be touched upon. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. And by the way, thanks to Sal for jumping into the fray, as he does so very often this evening. We are down to $60 and counting to make the fundraising goal for tonight. 6 at 10, 12 at 5, 3 at 20. We can get there from here. This is Conversation Radio, live from Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. This is The Horn. Okay, we're back at it. Don't know quite exactly. Sometimes you walk away and the music doesn't. Keep playing. Well, Agnes liked the first song. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thank you, Chug Punch. That puts us at only $30 to go to finish the program out. And kind of working on the fly here, I got a note from Isaac via Twitter to check out a particular hashtag. Let's see here. I'm almost afraid. Oh, dear God. There is now a hashtag called Trayvoning. Oh, dear God. Yuck. A new and horrible trend where teenagers reenact Trayvon Martin's death photo. Jesus. You know, I don't want to be one of those people who says that there's young people, but it's not the young people. It's the drive for instantaneous celebrity, I suppose. Sweet Jesus. God, God, God. And we are done. We are done fundraising for this evening. Thanks to Philip and Jack. Thank you both immensely. It makes things a lot easier. There are other stories. And again, I shared with you the Dick Cohen story. Lo and behold, I guess we shouldn't be surprised. Yes, we know which network it's coming from. But let's go to that panjandrum of cultural sensitivity, Lou Dobbs. I'm going to hate myself for this. I just know it. Assuming that this thing plays.
Rhetoric from the Obama administration is undeniably incendiary, obviously aimed at undercutting public confidence in the judicial system, trial by jury, and indeed the Zimmerman not guilty verdict. Many of the most offensive and corrosive comments have originated with the nation's leading law enforcement officer, Attorney General Eric Holder. First, President Obama releasing a statement yesterday calling for restraint but not missing an opportunity to push a gun control agenda, despite the fact that George Zimmerman was carrying a legal licensed handgun. The president's statement read,
isn't it interesting that he says that the president said this and the president said that, and yet, and this is Fox. It's not like they don't have sound bites to run. But Lou, he'll just read it for you. Or for Fox viewers, because, they don't have that whole art of knowing words down real good. Do tell, Lou, do tell.
Quote, I now ask every American to respect the call for calm reflection from two parents who lost their young son. We should ask ourselves if we're doing all we can to stem the tide of gun violence that claims too many lives across the country.
And this is wild-eyed Kenyan Muslim Sharia law socialism? Is that what we're supposed to understand? Now, see, from my perspective, that statement is full of weenie words, weasel words. I now ask every American to respect the call for calm reflection from two parents who lost their young son. They did not lose their young son. It's not like he crawled off into the woods and now they can't find him. He wasn't lost. He was killed in cold blood. But somehow that's incendiary, according to the incredibly pale guy, Lou Dobbs. But do continue.
The president's press secretary refused to answer questions today on the matter, but Attorney General Eric Holder had much to say while indicating a federal civil rights investigation is ongoing. The attorney general, sounding more like a state attorney general from a Jim Crow era rather than the head of federal law enforcement in 2013.
Oh, no, he didn't. Actually, yes, he did. He just called Eric Holder Jim Crow. A Jim Crow attorney, state attorney general. Why not just call him George Wallace, Lou, and have done with it?
Holder made the following statement, seemingly accusing the jury of racism for finding Zimmerman.
Okay, notice that. Seemingly accusing. In other words, this is something that occurred inside Lou Dobbs' mind and didn't necessarily come out of Eric Holder's mouth. And I'm not the guy to call on to defend Eric Holder. Okay? I've had Eric Holder problems from the moment he was nominated. This is a guy who winked at murder for hire. He really did. This is a guy who didn't want to prosecute anybody, any of the banksters who damn near destroyed this country. But now he's a dangerous racial bomb thrower.
Jeez. Our nation has experienced remarkable, once unimaginable progress. We've traveled a long way down the road to equality and opportunity.
See, you have to say that. Oh, we've come a long way. You know, we put away the German shepherds and the fire hoses, and George Wallace is dead, and so's Lester Maddox, and oh, golly gee, we can almost see the promised land from here. You have to say that kind of crap, even if it isn't true. Because you got to keep the privilege happy.
But, as we...
See, it's that but that drives... It's that but that drives Lou Dobbs crazy. But what, Mr. Attorney General?
...seen in Sanford. Our journey is not yet complete, and our work is far from over.
As we reported here last week, that work involved the Department of Justice, its active involvement in fomenting anti-Zimmerman protests in Sanford, Florida.
Only that's a lie. It was actually the city of Sanford that called the DOJ's community relations service of the Department of Justice. It was the city of Sanford that called them down there. Sanford Mayor Jeff Triplett told the Miami Herald, "There was so much angst and fear of the unknown. We had never been through something like this before. We didn't know what was going to happen and if this thing was going to blow. Mr. Battles has a calming way about him. He was a voice of reason. He got everybody to the table." But not in the thin gray settlings of what passes for a brain that slosh around between the ears of Lou Dobbs and Wingnut Daily and Night Fart and Hot Air and the Daily Baller. Oh, Jesus. Remember last night, Steve Doozy, talking about Steve Doozy, blaming this all on the new Black Panthers that don't exist?
Last year, after George Zimmerman's arrest, a division of the Department of Justice called the Community Relations Service actually spent thousands of taxpayer dollars to organize and train protesters, including one headline by so-called civil rights activist Reverend Al Sharpton, who's
Now, so-called, you throw that so-called in there if you want to delegitimize. That's like, you know, so-called human being, so-called American citizen, so-called. Yeah, that would be, you know, that would all be really, really disturbing if it was even remotely true. But Lou Dobbs is a serial liar. He is a part of the for-profit media, and he gets paid for throwing this incendiary bullshit out to be lapped up by the Otne Ute Itbres of the Oxfay Emigraphic Day. Can we understand this for what it is? Nothing's on fire. Nothing's burning. But that doesn't mean that the right wing in this country doesn't want it to be. Oh, by the way, following up on Trayvoning, Michael pointing out, hate to say it, but it ain't new. Heard about it almost since the case made news last year. A lot of sick people out there. Jesus, I hope. Thank you, Michael, for clearing that up. Let's go to the phones. Agnes tells me Kevin is with us.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
How are you, Kevin?
Good, good. You did catch what they're doing there. See, they're turning around. It's what the Bible said, calling good evil and evil good. They're taking, calling us the racist.
Yeah.
They're calling people standing for justice racist, while they, the racist, are claiming to be the ones standing for justice. And it just is aggravating. It's like...
Well, it passes aggravating, Kevin. It's frightening. Because these people...
Yeah, you know, people are buying it.
Kevin, this plays into my ongoing theory of the Cold Civil War. There is a Cold Civil War in this country, and these freaks are not happy with that. They're not unhappy about it because they would like for peace to... rain in the land. They want the Cold Civil War to go hot.
Yeah. And for all their talk about riots and this, that, and the other, one thing didn't go unnoticed by me. Almost every protest I saw or heard, which would be more heard in my case, was multiracial, very multiracial. And there's an awful lot of white people that are upset about it, but they don't want to say that on Fox News. They want to make it sound like it's just Obama and Holder trying to push this thing because it's a black issue. It is a black issue, but it's also a justice issue. And just like you said about Draven, you know, so-called victim or so-called American or so-called civil rights leader. Hey, I personally don't like Al Sharpton, but you know what? They're making me like him better every day.
But Kevin, the thing is, you understand that's not. It is not your call to decide whom people decide to see as a leader.
Right. Exactly. And. To say so-called civil rights leader is the slap in the face of Al Sharpton and every other civil rights leader in the country. It just is, and it upsets me because, like I said the other day in the email, I've got family that buy into this stuff, and it's like, you can't be serious. But they are. And I'm left wondering, I'm from the same family. What happened? Is it a generational thing, or is it a... And yeah, I know the GOP, I finally call the grand old party, because of the grand or the old part, and we know those people are going to fade away and die, but they're making life extremely difficult for us in the process. And I just, you know, I literally am left for a loss of words when I'm talking with family about stuff like that, and someone says, oh, I'm glad that George Zimmerman was acquitted. For what? That could be your child laying on that pavement.
Yeah, but see, they don't see that, Kevin. When you hear somebody who is possessed of white privilege say they are glad that he got acquitted, what they're really telling you is that they think they have this irrational, unintellectual, mindless fear, but they have it nonetheless. What they're telling you is that they fear that someday they may have to shoot a person of color, and when they do, they hope they get the same treatment George got.
Well, yeah. And that's a very real fear to me, because I see it in them. And I can't hide that. That's a big fear. And just like that guy up in Milwaukee that shot the 13-year-old, now trying to claim insanity. The only thing that was insane about it is what he did.
Yeah, see, you don't get to shoot somebody and then claim that you did not intend to kill them.
Right, exactly. I've seen my share of truly insane people, and that is not the act of an insane person. That is an act of a person who thought a 13-year-old black boy was somehow less enough of him that it was okay to kill him. And that's just simply what it was. There's no reason in the world to shoot a 13-year-old. No reason whatsoever. If you can't overpower a 13-year-old, you know.
Yeah, but he didn't even need to overpower the 13-year-old. He was confronting him. He was confronting him with an allegation of burglary.
Yeah, yeah. And to shoot the kid over it, to shoot any kid over it, of any, come on. You know, and then to try to claim that, it was insanity. It just boggles my mind that, and there will be the same white people and the same Fox News that will stand up for this cracker up in Minnesota, you know, that stood up for George Zimmerman because they're persecuting him because he's being prosecuted for shooting a black kid. And it just is, I don't know. But the good part is that we are astute enough, and there are enough of us out there that are astute enough to know what people like Newlaws and Steve Ducey are doing to be able to understand.
Oh, and I haven't even gotten, and you would probably despise me for doing it, Kevin. I haven't even gotten to the Ted Nugent column yet.
Yeah, well, you know. I remember Steve Ducey used to be a good reporter. I knew him from down in Tampa. And it's like, really? This good reporter went to Fox and turned into this piece of crap? You know? And I just have a hard time understanding people. It must have been something hidden in them, you know, that you just didn't see. And, of course, I saw him on the TV. I didn't know him personally, but you know what I'm saying. He was a good investigative reporter back then, but he's turned into a piece of crap. And when they're just outright lying and, you know, and when I have family, and I know it's not just family, I have family say, oh, well, Fox News, that's the only news station that tells the truth. And I want to crawl in a hole, you know. And so thank you for letting me vent a little, but it's it's to the point that I'm very frustrated because I'm an only child, Bob, and I don't want to go back to the South. It's gotten that scary to me to see what's happening down there.
Well, see, I have real sympathy with that, Kevin, because I can tell you a little something. Here in 3 days, something that really, really matters to me is going to start taking place in the little town where I was born and raised. It's a jazz and blues festival. And had I the wherewithal, I would dearly love to go down there and just, I mean, it's it really is that town putting its best foot forward for more than a week. And I would dearly love to just spend night after night listening to awesome music in quaint and enjoyable settings. I'd love to. Now, obviously, I can't. I don't have the financial means to go and take a vacation. May never. But by the same token, it would be worrisome. It would be worrisome just to know. I mean, I told a story when I got back from there about a couple of Hispanic workers being literally run over in the middle of the road intentionally.
Yep.
And the one young man was sitting in the hospital waiting to get well enough to be deported, and no one down there was interested in finding the guy who tried to kill him.
Yep.
And I just say that by way of letting you know that I understand the sense of interior conflict that you're talking about.
And it's especially because they weren't like this. They may have had some of it, but they certainly weren't like this when they were younger. And to try to, I don't even try.
Yeah, but consider what day in and day out Fox News does to your brain. Rick Goodner wasn't kidding when he wrote the Fox Syndrome Shared Psychotic Disorder and published it over on Amazon. He's not joking. Really, if you spend enough time with Fox News day in and day out, your mind will become something other than what it was going in, and it will not be for the better.
And it's also that constant fear that's pumped out by Fox.
Well, that's part of it. It's fear, it's paranoia, it's hatred, it's envy, it's jealousy, it's racism, bigotry, prejudice, it's anti-woman, anti-gay, anti-color, it's anti-everything but you. And it's like what Dr. John was talking about. It's reinforcing that, it's a matter of reinforcing that the other is the source of all one's problems.
Right.
Yeah.
And it applies even with me. As I've told the story, when I first became blind, I had some Christian people talking about if I wasn't healed, I just didn't have enough faith. And it's that, you know, when you mentioned that at the beginning of the program today, I thought to myself, you know, it even applies to that. At my expense, people are trying to make themselves feel better about themselves by saying to themselves, I have more faith than this person because they obviously didn't get healed. Now, they don't word it that way, but that's what it is. And, you know, so it just doesn't apply to race. It applies to anybody or anything that's different from you. And that's the definition of paranoia, isn't it?
Yeah, in large part.
Yeah, if it's not like me, there must be something wrong.
Exactly, and if there's anything wrong, it's not my fault; it's someone else's. You know, that's the ultimate irony. The right wing preaches personal responsibility and then provides every available out for it. Hey, Kevin, I got to roll because we're up against it, but it's good to talk to you this evening.
Yes, sir, and good luck there in Washington this week.
All right, thank you, Kevin. You take care.
Thank you.
Bye now. And that'll take us pretty much to the end of the program. Note coming in from Philip. Bob, Bob, Bob. At what point does Fox become guilty of crying fire without cause in a crowded theater? I apologize, Bob, but you played Lou Dobbs, and now I'll have to donate my formerly dedicated horn funds to the campaign to find Lou Dobbs a decent white proctologist capable of performing the necessary emergency surgery to remove Lou's head from so far up his ass. Anderson Cooper giving a forum to a weeping juror appalls me. While she cited Zimmerman's stand your ground rights, he never asked why Trayvon Martin wasn't permitted to exercise the same rights when a stranger with a gun stalked him. And now the mainstream media wrings its hands about the issue of race. Excuse the sarcasm, because I'm grateful for the coverage. I was totally unaware that racism still was an issue in the post-Obama, post-racial era. I'm not writing anymore about this, Phillip says. I'm still stunned that Lou Dobbs was defending a Hispanic without citing his thorough examination and confirmation that he was documented. Be well. Signed, Phillip. Yeah, I found that a little shocking, too. And that goes back to the fluidity of whiteness, right? Exactly. So we find ourselves at the end of the program. Thank you all for the time that you have invested in this and for your kind contributions. Lucky for us, we get to start tomorrow on an even keel. Thank you very, very much. Thanks go out to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and yes, acheact.org. Go to acheact.org. Get busy. Get active. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Thank you.